This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we have, I think, a very fascinating guest, and we're going to cover a couple of subjects. We're going to talk about statin drugs, because our guest has some very, very well-thought-out criticisms of our current reliance on statin drugs. He is also an expert on coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol, so we want to discuss that as well. He is eminently qualified to do so because you might say he's the son of the father of CoQ10. That's kind of a strange designation. But in addition to being a scientist and a cardiologist in his own right, our guest, Dr. Peter Langgen, has been practicing cardiology for 26 years. And he trained initially in conventional cardiology, but he's also inherited the legacy of his father, a pioneering physician who was one of the first to recognize the clinical applications of coenzyme Q10. His father is Per Langgen, who performed the first human double-blind controlled heart failure study with CoQ10 in the United States. So they worked together on CoQ10 research, and Dr. Peter Langgen, who we're talking to today, is on the executive committee of the International Coenzyme Q10 Association. He is a board-certified cardiologist, and CoQ10 continues to be a major tool in Dr. Langgen's clinical practice, and he's also researching it in his research laboratory in Tyler, Texas, where he's devised a measure that many of us doctors in the field of integrative medicine utilize. We utilize tests now that he devised for measuring levels of CoQ10, which is a very valuable tool to find out if patients are attaining adequate levels, if they're deficient, and it's kind of a target that we work towards when we're trying to treat patients with heart problems and especially congestive heart failure. And, of course, he lectures extensively on CoQ10 all over the world. So without further ado, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Langgen.
Well, thank you for the kind introduction, and it's certainly my pleasure.
Okay, well, let's, I think what I like to do, we divide these podcasts into two parts, and maybe we can bifurcate. First, let's talk about something that you recently participated in, which is a review article which is critical of our over-reliance on statin drugs. And there's a nice tie-in to coenzyme Q10, which you'll share with us. Give us the outlines of this critique.
Yeah, it can be boiled down into sort of looking at statins in a couple of ways in terms of their harm. And one of them, I think, the more surprising, at least to me, and this was put forth by the Japanese colleagues that were part of that article that you referred to. And as you know, statins are promoted in the prevention of atherosclerotic disease very, very heavily, with very little evidence that they do so. And one of the more fascinating things that's happened in the last few years is, I'm sure you're aware that there's this increasingly popular coronary calcium score.
Right.
Where by CT scanning, you can get fairly high resolution imagery of your coronary tree And they give you a score according to how much calcium is they identify. And it can be anywhere from zero, which would be no identifiable calcium, to very, very high, like, you know, 1 or 2,000.
Yep.
And that correlates with underlying atherosclerotic disease. So if you have these really, really heavily calcified coronaries, then if you did an angiogram, there's a pretty high likelihood you'd have a lot of plaque and probably at least a moderate amount of narrowings. Well, these scans now have been done in many, many, many thousands of people, and they're being done on a regular basis, like a yearly basis. And a couple of really fascinating studies came out that showed that if you compare placebo to statins, statins accelerate this coronary calcification.
Wow.
Worse than your...
Yeah, I didn't even realize that.
That it was. I mean, these are huge trials. One is a big multi-center trial out of Europe, and one was an American study. And both of them showed that statins worsen the very disease they're supposed to prevent or lessen or benefit. And there was even a high-dose statin trial versus low-dose, and the higher the dose, the worse, you know, it made the disease. And that's pretty shocking. And what's interesting about it is these studies have been published, and they're by big journals. These are big centers, and they're completely ignored. I haven't seen it change statin prescribing at all, at least in our community. So anyway, that's one thing. The statins, there's evidence that they accelerate the very thing they're supposed to benefit, which is atherosclerosis.
Well, let me just interject, though. I mean, clearly there, you know, and I've looked at the literature. There's a lot of doubt about whether statins may be appropriate for certain populations. Say for individuals over 75, there's some real questions. For women in general, there's some real questions. Although studies suggest that when you use statins in an appropriate population, if people are at high risk of cardiovascular disease, perhaps they've already had a bypass or angioplasty, or they really are at very high risk, they have sky-high cholesterol, that then the statins can actually, and regardless of how the arteries look, there can be a reduction in events. So what do you say to that evidence?
Well, okay, if you take the very, very best of that rather dubious literature, because, you know, statin literature is all, you know, terribly conflicted. I mean, the authors have huge financial interest in these companies.
Right, there's conflict of interest.
So there's a lot of, you have to look at those studies with a lot of skepticism. But even if you did, you know, if you look through them carefully and you say, okay, they're, like you mentioned, in secondary prevention where you've already had a heart attack and maybe looking only at middle-aged men, there's a little benefit sometimes in some studies. And that benefit is not in any way related to the degree of cholesterol lowering. It's not related to how high your cholesterol is when they start you on a statin. And it's assumed that it's related to other statin effects. You know, statins have, they call them pleiotropic effects. You know,
right.
So the
effects that they don't advertise or can't make medical claims about, but they're the side benefits as opposed to side effects, negative
right.
side
effects.
Right,
and they're not very powerful. I mean, they may have a little bit of blood thinning properties or a little bit of beneficial effect on your endothelium. And so you're talking about maybe a fraction of a percent in absolute benefit in some of these subgroups. So that's the good side of it. And on the bad side, you have just a ton of side effects. I thought it was interesting that the theory on why statins may actually worsen your coronaries is that they inhibit our production of vitamin K2, which requires some isoprenoids that mevalonate pathway is required for. And that's actually something I hadn't really thought about until this, doing the work for this paper.
Right. This is kind of like a new headline. In fact, this is very apropos because I just got an email from one of my avid listeners who posed exactly that question. Dr. Hoffman, what do you think about this new study that suggests that statins may get in the way of the benefits of vitamin K2? And I said, wow, you know, that sort of makes sense. It's a fat-soluble vitamin. It's sort of in that mevalonic acid pathway that statins block in terms of CoQ10, but also it might affect vitamin K2. So what say ye about that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely evidence it does. And, you know, from what I understand, I'm not a K2 expert, but it's essential for this GLA matrix protein that is involved in keeping calcium in bones and out of other tissues like your arteries. And so if you inhibited K2 through the use of statins, yeah, it does make some sense. You might actually adversely affect this calcification in our corneas. So that's the theory anyway on that part of it. But it's more complicated because of statins. You know, they block so many things and then impair your mitochondrial bioenergetics, which really affects all tissues. So it's maybe multifactorial.
Right. So there's a lot of things that can happen. And I'm reading from, this is actually a study that I don't think you put your name on, but it's a study that you sent along to me by Drs. David and Ravenskov. Dr. Ravenskov is a Danish physician, I believe he's Danish, who is an outspoken critic of statins. And he writes something very interesting here. One of the most supposedly most convincing studies about the benefits of statins. It was such a resounding success that they stopped it after just less than 2 years. They said that it would be unethical not to give everybody in the study statins, you know, like the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, you know, that you can't withhold medication because if the medication is going to be helpful, it would be unethical to do the study for 10 years while people are dropping dead. So they stopped it after 2 years. But what they said was, that there was a remarkable, this is in the widely touted in the popular press, there was about a 50% reduction in the risk of cardiac event, heart attack, or death due to the use of the statins. But then it's pointed out that that means a difference that is tiny, that just 0.41% of the populace in this study, less than 0.5% benefited from Crestor, is the drug in question here. And what that translates to, it's hard for people to understand these statistics, even doctors don't understand these statistics, but that would mean that 244 people would have to be treated to prevent a single fatal or non-fatal heart attack. So 243 people would be treated needlessly, exposed to the potential side effects hazards of the statins to save just one person. And when you put it in those terms, that's not very impressive.
No, yeah. And they always use the relative risk, you know, so you could, you know, you can have, they make it sound, they can say it's a 50% reduction if you go from one case in 1,000, or say 2 cases in 1,000, you go down to 1. Well, that's true, but that's just a fraction of a percent. You know, so yeah, they use the relative percent to sort of exaggerate the benefits. And then, of course, their side effects are always given in absolute numbers. You know, it's tricky.
Right. So another way to put it, and this is from Ravenskov's article, is that your chance to avoid a non-fatal heart attack during the next 2 years is 97% without treatment. But you can increase your chances to about 98%. By taking a Crestor every day. So, you know, given, yeah, you know, that statistic, I mean, that's maybe, and there's a little illustration of one of these advertisements for Lipitor there. It says Lipitor reduces the risk of heart attack by 36%. You go, God, everybody, we should put in the drinking water then. That's great. But what that means is that it's relative risk. It may be a very tiny percentage difference, but it's reflected as a this big number because of statistical manipulation.
Yeah, it's really sad, and it's so flagrant. You know, they do it all the time. You know, it's amazing to me that they get away with it and that people don't recognize it for being borderline fraudulent. You know, but yeah, they do it all the time.
Yeah, so you know, you're obviously the CoQ10 maven. You're an expert on the subject. Explain to our listeners how statins impact CoQ10. What is it that happens when you take a statin?
Yeah, you have to look at it that there's a large, think of it as a tree, you know, biochemical tree with all these branches. Statins block the trunk of this tree. It's like cutting down a tree at the trunk, and then you affect every branch of the tree. You're blocking an enzyme in a biochemical pathway in all of our cells that makes many compounds. It makes cholesterol, which was the target compound, and that's how these, they're really mycotoxins. Statins are naturally occurring in different fungus.
In red yeast rice, originally, that was how...
Yeah, yeah, well, and also in oyster mushrooms, there's a variety of... there's about four major families of fungi that most statins are derived from. But, you know, they're normally released in the environment to kill other organisms, plant or animal, because plants and animals both use what we call the mevalonic pathway. And when you block that, you block cholesterol, which is essential for life. That's a big problem in itself.
What are some of the compounds what are some of the compounds that the body makes from cholesterol? How is cholesterol a building block?
All your steroid hormones, you know, your sex hormones, your cortisol, if you block cholesterol, you're going to be lower in testosterone, for instance, and there's definitely a relationship between sexual functioning and, you know, statin therapy. So you block all the products that require cholesterol. You impair membrane stability because cholesterol is a big component of cell membranes. And then you block other compounds like coenzyme Q, which is the cofactor for most of our energy production. You block dolichol, which is another fat-soluble compound required for glycation reactions, which are important. And then you block all these what they call prenyl proteins, and I think there's at least 25 of them, if not more. And they all have different important functions, and some of them are selenium-dependent, like glutathione peroxidase, which is a wonderful antioxidant. And you even impair things like transfer RNA, which is a selenoprotein. And if you add all that up, it's a remarkable cell poison. And one time, just out of, to give you an example, if you take some statin pills, doesn't really, just your average human dose, and you crush up a pill with a little bit of water and you give it to a houseplant, you'll kill it. You'll kill anyone you can imagine.
Yeah.
It takes about a week, but all the leaves turn yellow and fall off and it dies.
There's no warning on the packages.
Give it to your houseplants.
Well,
if you do the same thing, mix it up with a little sugar and put it on a fire ant mound, that's an invasive type of ant. It's very, very common in the South. They absolutely wipe them out. They have no defense against it. They're incredibly toxic to life forms of all types because this pathway is so essential for life. You can't interfere with it and not have consequences. It's just not possible. So I don't look at statins as having side effects. I look at them more accurately as having effects. You know, if you interrupt that pathway, there's no way you can stay healthy. It's not possible. There's no way your brain can function normally. You know, the brain requires a huge amount of cholesterol, and if you lower it by 30 or 40% or even 50%, it's not going to work normally. And what's interesting about that is people who use their minds the most, like, CEOs of big companies, they can't tolerate statins very long at all. I mean, they start, you know, they just can't function because they have to keep so many things on the top of their head. Musicians will, within a very short period of time, within a week, can no longer improvise. You know, they can play, you know, things they have memorized, but, you know, this has never been done, but I would love to see what effect statins would have on, you know, world-class professional chess players.
Wow.
You know, and there's another similar analogy. If you look at the statin's effects on skeletal muscle, people who are relatively inactive can tolerate them fairly well. But if you look at statins in elite athletes, you know, marathon runners, it just wipes them out. They cannot.
Well, the animal studies are strongly suggestive of that, because if you virtually every time they give mice or rats statins and they put them on a treadmill, they just go slower and they have less exertional tolerance. And, you know, that's just the way it is. Yeah. That's well known.
So at any rate, yeah, their toxicity is manifest way sooner in people who are or the most active. You know, if you're really, really sedentary and you're not pushing your muscles or your mind, you know, you might tolerate them a little longer.
Well, the new mantra about statins is that it's now acknowledged. I mean, I remember when I think it was the head of the American Heart Association went on the Today Show, and he was talking about this new study that one of the studies that showed the great benefits of statins, and he was pushing the statins. And then Matt Lauer asked him about side effects. He said they're exceedingly rare. They occur in probably less than 1 in 10,000 patients. And I was practically yelling at the TV screen, because I have, you know, maybe I have 10,000 patients in my practice, you know, have seen over the years. But I've seen dozens of patients who suffer from side effects. So I knew as a physician that wasn't true. But the new mantra about statins is that there's some kind of genetic susceptibility to the muscle aches that occur with statins, and that if you don't have that, you're fine. And if you do have that, you get hammered. So, you know, poor you if you have it. There's not much we can do about it. Maybe, you know, you have to forego the statins. But for the vast majority of people, that's no big deal. What's your take on that?
It is true. There's been some work looking at some genetic variants that predispose you to worse statin side effects. I think that's by far the minority. I think it's pretty rare to find someone on a statin isn't suffering from it. And it can be things, and what happens is they attribute it to other things. They start losing their memory and they say, well, I'm just getting older. Their back's killing them, their joints are killing them, and they go, well, everybody has joint and muscle.
Yeah, pain. I mean, they always say, you know, you're 52, you're 58, you're 71,
right.
You know, what do you expect?
They're fatigued, and they go, well, you know, I'm just not in shape or whatever. And so, and then a lot of these side effects are just treated with other drugs, you know, the joint pains and it's just crazy. You end up with polypharmacy.
Indeed.
You know, because some of these people get depressed, they have insomnia, you know, they have erectile dysfunction, so they're on, you know, multiple drugs treating their side effects. It's sad, but I think side effects from statins, you know, approaches 100%. It's a delay in time.
What about the new information that there's a very pronounced increase in the onset of type 2 diabetes in people who take statins?
Disturbing.
Yeah.
That's terribly disturbing.
And is there a clear-cut mechanism for that? I mean, is it known why that might be the case?
Oh, you know, there's some theories on it. You know, if you're affecting the bioenergetics of all cells, that includes the bioenergetics of cells that produce insulin. But I think it's more than that. I can get this paper to you. It just came out, of all places. It was out of, I think it was a VA system out of Dallas, but also had co-authors in San Antonio. And it looked specifically at the diabetic problem. And interestingly, they looked at diabetics on statins, and the diabetics on statins had way more diabetic complications. And as you probably are aware, diabetes is being used as an indication to start statin therapy.
Sure. It's become almost medical legally mandatory. You know, the guidelines state that if you have a patient who's diabetic, they're at higher risk of cardiovascular disease, so that, you know, whether cholesterol is high or not, they should all be on statins. And frankly, you know, we in, you know, you're a clinician as well, you know, we are in the liability crosshairs. And, you know, patients have a nasty tendency to sometimes have heart attacks or die. And as long as they die while they're on a statin, that's okay. But if you were one of those dissenting physicians who said, nah, you know, I don't really believe in statins, I don't think they're beneficial, well, somebody could come back and sue you, right? I mean, that's our current medical system.
Because you're not practicing according to standard of care, which is how they define malpractice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right.
So one theory that comes to mind for me is, you know, in addition to whatever metabolic toxicity that the statins cause, and they interrupt mitochondrial function, which we know is essential to blood sugar processing, and also people who are on statins, there's a tendency if you're on statins to be maybe a little slowed down, maybe a little more tired, maybe you don't exercise as much. Plus, you might get a false sense of reassurance. You say, hey, I don't need to be so careful about my diet because my cholesterol is 145. And I don't need to exercise that much because I'm protected by this statin. So maybe that's part of the mechanism by which people, you know, if their cholesterol is okay, they become fat, sedentary, and they develop type 2 diabetes. Maybe that's part of that equation, too.
Yeah, that could easily be. You know, I've often felt that the only benefit of statins was a psychological one, you know, and it's a pretty important one. If you are of a mindset, like many, many people are, that cholesterol is causative for heart disease, then it's a bad thing if it's elevated. And that's reinforced, you know, by everything you bump into, and certainly reinforced by your physician personnel, you know, the nurses and the doctor themselves. And then when you take this drug and you come back and they're all smiles and the cholesterol's low and they're all patting you on the back, you know, there's a psychological benefit from that.
Yeah, this is the compliance effect. I mean, it's like every day in every way I'm making myself better.
So, the mind-body thing, if you believe that you've done something that's going to help you, you know, maybe in some ways it does. I think that's their only conceivable benefit.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, pretty decisive opinion about the value of statins. And this is a good point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. In part two, I want to concentrate on your research on coenzyme Q10, how it, working with your father, who is a true pioneer in this field, and how you've carried forward his work, and looking at some of the new information about proper dosing, ways to monitor levels of coenzyme Q10, other applications of CoQ10, and then the new ubiquinol story, takes us forward into the 21st century. So in part two, we'll tackle some of those subjects with today's guest. He's Dr. Peter Langsgen, a pioneer in research on coenzyme Q10, a second-generation pioneer because his father was one of the first to utilize coenzyme Q10 clinically in the United States. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and please turn to part two of today's podcast with Dr. Peter Langsgen. This is Intelligent Medicine.